We're ready to go now. Let's go ahead and get started. I welcome you all out to the meeting. The meeting's a public meeting, and we encourage all of you to express your views. If any of you would like to comment or have questions on presentations that are made, you need to get a card and fill that information out and get that passed up to us. We'd first like to have the RAC introduce themselves. We'll start over here with Mike and go around.
I'm Mike Gates. I'm the field manager with the BLM in Fillmore.
Matt Clark, sportsman's rep.
Carl Hirsch, sportsman's rep.
Ben Lauder, public at large.
Dan Potts, non-consumptive.
Chris Marble, public at large.
Ron Camp, sportsman's rep.
George Garcia, Forest Service, Spanish Fort.
Alan White, agriculture.
Larry Fitzgerald, agriculture.
I'm Richard Hansen. I'm the chair at large. I would like to excuse Ken Strong. He had a foot surgery, unable to be with us. And we have to my left here is Jason Vernon. He's the Central Region Director. Appreciate him being here. And we have our folks that do the recording and take the minutes. We're thankful for that. Any wildlife board members here tonight? Let's see. Okay. We'd like to explain a little bit how the RAC procedure works. The division personnel will come and make a presentation and proposals. After they're through, the RAC will be able to ask questions on that proposal. Then we'll go back to the public, and they can ask questions. And remember, it's only questions on the presentation. Then after that segment, we'll remain at with the public where you can come up and make comments concerning the proposal and any ideas that you might have. And at that point, when that's through, then it'll come back to the RAC for their discussion and their motions and anything they'd like to do at that time. So we'd like to first start off. We need an approval of the agenda and minutes, and I'll entertain a motion if all of you have had a chance to look at the minutes of our last meeting and this agenda, if there's any corrections or changes you'd like to see put in place.
I'd like to make a motion to approve the agenda and the minutes from the previous meeting.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve the minutes and agenda from last meeting. All in favor? Appears unanimous. Okay. The last Wildlife Board meeting was held on January 3rd, and I didn't have a summary. They usually send me a summary of that, so I'm remembering basically what happened. There was all of the action items, waterfowl recommendation, black bear recommendations, the AIS rule amendments, private pond rule amendment, and the dedicated hunter rule amendments all passed unanimously after some discussion on some of those issues. They did talk about the bear's ears and how that would affect wildlife, and according to Marty Bushman, everything would remain the same as far as the DWR is concerned, hunting and access and et cetera. Is there anything that any of you know about that happened there you want to bring up? Ben, do you remember anything that...
It's been a while.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, that's how I am. It went pretty smooth, had some good discussion. So with that, we'd like to turn the time over to Jason and let him give us an update.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
I'll be brief tonight as we have a pretty good schedule tonight for our Bucks and Bulls and Once in a Lifetime. A couple things that we have been doing. Our wildlife section, it's that time of the year again where they're out counting sage-grouse on leks. They're starting to strut, and our biologists will be out there. If you have any interest in visiting with our biologists and going out on those leks, please contact us, and we can take you out there. It's pretty interesting and fun to see those birds out there on those leks. Also, this last spring, our biologists have been visiting bear dens. Haven't found any cubs yet this year. One of the bears has been out running around already, so we don't think it had cubs, but they'll be out, I think, tomorrow looking at bear dens again. Our aquatics, they've been out on Yuba Reservoir collecting pike eggs for tiger muskie production. They collected about 150 pike there and harvested over 3 million eggs that were crossed with muskie. Now they're incubating in our hatchery system. We had quite a few volunteers on that project, and we appreciate all the volunteers that came and helped our aquatic staff on that. Our community fishing program is still running strong. We've got several projects throughout the region where they're scheduled to do some habitat improvement, put some structure down in the bottom of these community ponds over the next couple of weeks. They did one a few weeks ago, the Willow Pond. And they'll be working on Pole Canyon Pond, Sunset Pond, and there's some other work on Sandy Pond that's pending right now. But we will be helping those community fisheries enhance fish survivorship, recruitment, and hopefully reduce the efficiency of those avian predators, those birds that keep coming in on those. We are still working on the treatment for Yuba Reservoir, using rotenone over the next couple of years, still evaluating our options on that. The scoping notice is currently out right now for environmental assessment so that we can move forward with that treatment if that's what we decide to do. Some of the discussion on that, the future management will include yellow perch, walleye, and sterile tiger muskie. If you have any comments on that environmental assessment, you can get in touch with myself or Chris Crockett, our aquatics manager. Aquatic invasive species, I think many are aware that quagga mussel was detected in Deer Creek Reservoir. It'll be 3 years ago, I guess, almost, nearly. Within our agency, we're splitting up how we do work with quagga, with AIS. We'll be splitting some work with the law enforcement interdiction duties. We've promoted Casey Mickelson for the next year to be in charge of the interdiction portion of that within law enforcement. And then we'll be working separately on the biological duties from that so that there'll be a split there and we can focus specifically on interdiction or on the biology. Last summer we had an incident at Tibble Fork where they had high flows of water coming down there that were very muddy as they've been working on the dam there on Tibble Fork and American Fork Creek. The dam completion scheduled for this May. We hope to have that. We hope they have that done soon. And we don't have any plans to restock American Fork Creek until we're confident that it's suitable for trout. Although it has been noted that some fish have moved back into some of those impacted reaches already from unaffected sections. Mike Slater, which I think many of you know in our aquatic section, as well as Chris Crockett and our outreach section, Scott Root and Shantae, will be manning a booth at the upcoming Wasatch Fly Tying Expo. That's the 7th and 8th. And we'd invite you all to attend that expo. In our outreach section, again, going back to community fisheries, we've got many community fisheries classes. We'll be beginning soon. These are for youth, and you can sign those kids up by contacting the cities in which the community fisheries are in. And, of course, the division website has a list of all those community fisheries on it as well. And along those same lines, we need volunteers to help instruct those youth of those community fisheries. Great opportunity for dedicated hunters to take advantage of. It's only a couple hours a week to teach fishing to these youth, and count that towards your dedicated hunter. We don't have dates yet, but there will be some fishing seminars coming up soon in conjunction with Sportsman's Warehouse. There will be a family fishing seminar as well as a bass fishing seminar. So stay tuned for that. Once we get those dates, we'll be putting them on our website, and I'm sure social media and Sportsman's Warehouse will be promoting those as well. One event that will be coming up that is a great event that I remember doing many years ago is the Fishing Day for Special Needs Youth. It's a day that we hold up at Salem Pond, invite special needs kids up. This will be on Tuesday, May 9th this year. Another great event where we need volunteers, and we anticipate anywhere between 1,200 and 1,500 youth coming up, having opportunity to fish. It's great to see the joy on those kids' faces as they come and do that. So if you're at all possible to come and help with that, it's a great event. Maybe the last thing I'll hit on is kind of our law enforcement crossed with wildlife. It's a shed antler collection. I think many know it's been closed since February 3rd. It'll be reopened this Saturday, April 1st. Just as a reminder for those who want to get out, you'll still need to do take the ethics course. If you're going to collect between April 1st and April 15th, you need to take that course online and then carry that certificate with you as you're out. Just kind of some information I found today. As of March 21st, 26 people received citations for violating the closure, and there's other cases that are being worked as well. So we'll be looking forward to the opportunity to get out and collect those shed antlers again. And with that, we'll turn the time back over to you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is the shed antler, have they considered making that a permanent date?
I've not heard anything about making that permanent.
Okay, just wondering. Okay, I think we're ready for our first presentation. Justin will be presenting our Bucks, Bowls, and Once-in-a-Lifetime Permit recommendations for 2017.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tonight I'm going to present the Bucks, Bulls, and Once-in-a-Lifetime Permit recommendations for 2017. So to begin, we'll start with deer. This graph here shows the general season buck harvest over the last 10 years or so, and in 2016 we had a phenomenal harvest. We harvested just shy of 32,000 bucks on general season units in the state. We haven't harvested that many bucks on general season units since 1996. And we did it with about 15,000 to 16,000 fewer hunters. Success rates were just incredible. A lot of mature bucks coming through the harvest. It was just a banner year for deer hunting in the state. You look at the buck to doe ratio trends over the last 25 years or so. Early 90s, we had years that our buck to doe ratios were in the single digits, 7 to 8 bucks per 100 does statewide on general season units. And we climbed out of that, and we hovered around 15 for about a decade or so. In the last 4 years, we've just climbed and climbed. And last year, we were at 23 bucks per 100 does on general season units. And this year, in our fall classification, with the harvest we received and some of the drought conditions and harder winter we had in winter 2015 and 16, that went down a bit. But you can still see, for general season, we managed for 15 to 20 bucks per 100 does. 15 to 17 or 18 to 20. We have two different slots there, and we're still above that. you look at fawn production, this graph I show every year, pretty good decrease in 2002, climbed out of it. The last 8 years or so, we've been mid to low 60s in our fawn production. This last year we dipped. We were 59 fawns per 100 does. The take-home on this is generally when you're around 60 fawns per 100 does, things are okay, but we have had a slip from previous years. This is something I normally don't present at a RAC meeting, but it's important for tonight's recommendations. In the winter of 2015-16, we had a tougher winter than we'd had the previous 4 or 5 years. I think for the first time we had winter, and it was hard in some pockets of the state. And then in the summer, we had pockets of the state that had drought conditions. And together, that wasn't great for some of our deer populations, especially the younger animals, the fawns, that we're trying to recruit into these populations. And if you look at units like the Cache and the Okra Stansberries and even the Wasatch Manti, our fawn survival rates were about 27% to 31%. And that's not the end of the world. Generally on these units, you can lose about half of your fawns and you're fine, you stay stable. So anything under 50% is something we get concerned about. And so we had areas of the state that just didn't do well as far as bringing fawns into the population. And what that really means for tonight's discussion is these are less yearling bucks that would have been available for public hunters on the landscape. Following up from this winter, December to March, we've had low fawn survival in many parts of the state. Up there in the Cache, that in red, that just shows 0 to 30% fawn survival. Some of these other areas in yellow, they're between 30 and 50% fawn survival. So in areas in northern Utah, we've already fallen under that 50% survival rate for some of these fawns. And again, why this is important for tonight's discussion are these are yearling bucks that would be available this fall had they survived. In addition to that, we fed deer on the following units, the Box Elder, the Cache, Camas, and Ogden. We had about 100 feeding sites, and it was quite the effort. Pictures tell 1,000 words, and what this is a picture of is not a bunch of division personnel out feeding deer. This is sportsmen, and we really couldn't have done some of the things that we did this year with our deer feeding efforts without the sportsmen in the state. And great partnership, and we're really grateful. And so thank you for all that were involved and that donated time or money or effort or energy, because it's been a long winter. So with that said, our general season deer permit recommendations for 2017, we're recommending a decrease of about 1,600 permits. And because we manage on 29 units, we're recommending no change on 12 units, increases on 5, and decreases on another 12. So we'll jump right into it by region, the breakdown. On the far left, we have the individual unit, and this first slide is just essentially the northern region. So all the units that are managed by that region. And then the objective, what we're managing to, 15 to 17 bucks per 100 does, or 18 to 20. And then the buck-to-doe ratio of 20, 14, 15, and 16. And that column third to the right, highlighted in green, this is the three-year average buck-to-doe ratio, which is what we manage to. And so if we're exceeding 18 to 20 or 15 to 17, we're over those targets and have opportunities for more bucks on the landscape. And if it's in yellow, we're typically below. And as you can see on the Ogden, Box Elder, and the Cache, even though these units are exceeding the buck-to-doe ratios, we feel like these areas in particular, when you go 2 years with limited fawn recruitment, limited bucks coming into the population, these buck-to-doe ratios are going to drop. And so we'd like to have cuts in permits leading up to that. And this is, you look at the Cache, where they got hit the hardest. They went from 20 bucks per 100 does to 15. And what we're really trying to avoid are these big swings in buck-to-doe ratios on a unit in a given year. We want more stability, which is what's driving the recommendations. So recommending a decrease in 900 permits in the northern region. In the central region, we're recommending decreases on the Nebo, the Okra Stansberries, and the Wasatch Mountains West. Again, the Nebo, declining trend in buck-to-doe ratio. Okra Stansberries, same thing, pretty good cut, pretty solid decrease in permits from last year. And the okra stansberries, that's another unit where we're struggling with not just fawn survival, but in some areas, adult survival as well. And then the Wasatch Mountains West, again, declining trend there. So overall, a decrease of about 300 permits in the region. In the southern region, this part of the state didn't get hit as hard, and we had higher fawn survival rates over the last couple of years. Recommending decreases on the Boulder and the Fish Lake there in the middle of your screen, and then increases on the Beaver, Fillmore, Pine Valley, and Zion unit, all of which are exceeding their three-year average buck-to-doe ratio. In the southeast region, recommending a decrease in permits on the Manti. Again, this is an area that had low fawn survival and a healthy drop, or a pretty abrupt drop in buck-to-doe ratio, but an increase on the Abajos, 3 years in a row of over 20 bucks per 100 does on that unit. And then finally, for the northeast region, again, that south slope Yellowstone area is an area that our radio collar deer, these fawns are declining pretty rapidly, and so we're recommending cuts on the south slope, Yellowstone and Bonanza, and then cuts on the Wasatch Mountains East as well. And these are all areas that we've been increasing permits over the last few years, and so we're just trying to get out ahead of these cuts. Moving on to premium limited entry, for these units, the Henrys and the Punsagunt, we managed to an age objective, so we're shooting for greater than 40% of the bucks being 5 years or older, both of which are doing phenomenal in that regard. And with that, recommending no change in permits on the Henrys and the Punsagunt. For management bucks, that's a little different. We managed to a buck-to-doe ratio on these units as well. And so if we're, and that range is 40 to 55 bucks per 100 does. Again, we're trending in the right direction on the Punsagunt, and we're still really, really high on the Henrys. And with that, on the Punsagunt, we're recommending an increase of 6 permits from 25 to 31. And on the Henrys, in November or December, the Wildlife Board passed where we could have a management archery hunt and a management muzzleloader hunt. And so we're sticking with the 30 total permits, but we're just going to break it up to where we have 9 archery, 12 any weapon, and 9 muzzleloader permits and see how that fares. Moving on to limited entry, there's a lot on this graph, or table. The take-home is our limited entry deer is fairly boring. We're not recommending any change on the units throughout the state, and that's because they're either within the range of their buck-to-doe ratio or they're exceeding it, and we've recently done increases last year and feeling like we're making good progress in this regard. For late-season limited entry buck permits, these are hunts that occur on general season units that are managed for 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does, and they're exceeding that 20 bucks per 100 does number. We're recommending 167 permits, which is 25 more than last year. We added 3 new units, the Mount Dutton, the Ogden, and the Plateau Fish Lake, and recommending an increase on the 9 mile as well. So in summary, for limited entry deer, again, just not a lot of movement, 25 additional permits in that late season muzzleloader hunt. Moving on to elk, for general season, recommending no change for spike any bull or youth any bull. Statewide, our success rate on the spike hunt was 15%, and anything under 20 is something that we're comfortable with. And really, these numbers are set in the statewide plan that was passed in December 2015. Moving on to limited entry elk, recommending statewide an increase of 81 permits, or about a 3% increase. If you break it down by the units that are managed at the higher end, 7.5 to 8-year-old bull, recommending an increase on the San Juan, again, 3 years in a row of exceeding eight years old, and a decrease on the Book Cliffs Little Creek. Some of these ones that you'll see a star by their name, these are units that when we passed the statewide elk plan, we changed the objective, the age objective, and so that's why they may be off and pretty abrupt changes from last year. Let's see, 6.5 to 7-year-old bull units. A lot of movement in all these, pretty much up or down across the board. Increases on the Book Cliffs Bitter Creek, the Monroe, Diamond Mountain in the Southwest Desert, and decreases in the rest of the units there. Overall, though, in this category, about an 11 permit reduction. Moving on to, there it is, 5.5 to 6. We're recommending increases on the manti. Again, it's just keeps hovering there above the average age of higher end of 6. Slight increase, about 14 permits or so. Increases on the LaSalles, slight increase of about 10. 9 Mile Anthro, a little bit there, and on the Wasatch Mountains as well, where this unit's, that average age is, 3-year average is 6.7, and we were right there again this last year. And on a decrease on the North Slope Three Corners unit. One thing that I don't highlight in the PowerPoint, but I'm sure it's going to come up tonight, what we tried to do for the most part is on the Manti and the Wasatch, where we added permits, we did our best to add those permits to the mid-season hunt. This is a hunt that was approved by the Wildlife Board in December that'll overlap the spike hunt during the middle of that season. And so I'm sure that question may come up, but I didn't prepare a special slide for it. And then finally, for the 4.5 to 5-year-old age class, again, some increases on the Grouse Creek and the Ponsagant, and slight decrease on the Pilots and Cache North. Just limited movement here as well. Moving on to pronghorn. Statewide, we recommend a permit increase of 78. And it seems like many pockets of the state are just doing well with pronghorn. Everywhere we surveyed last year and our classification, things just tend to be up in a lot of our areas that have these animals. Finally, for once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations, I recommend no changes on moose. Pretty good increase on bison, going from 96 permits to 148. And a lot of that's based on the book cliffs, although we are seeing increases on the Henrys as well. That population's doing well, and it's growing. Recommending an 11-permit increase on desert bighorns. All our survey work came back really positive the last few years, and a slight decrease on Rockies and slight increase on mountain goats. In December, the Wildlife Board passed 2 archery-only hunts as well, one for bison on the Henrys and one for mountain goats on the central Uintas. And so we're recommending 10 archery-only bison permits and 2 mountain goat permits. And that's my recommendation, so thank you. Which one? Where's that at? This one?
Okay, thanks, yeah. Justin. RAC members, do you have any questions for Justin on this presentation?
Yeah, I've got one. Justin, you know, when I looked at all those numbers,
one in particular that just leapt out on me on deer was the Chalk Creek East Canyon being essentially way over objective, and yet there was no recommended increases. And the same kind of a thing on the east side of the Wasatch too.
Yeah.
Is there some magic there, or explain it?
Yeah, there is. So the Chalk Creek East Canyon, Morgan Southridge, it's a unit that's just dominated by private lands for the most part. And we have some WMAs there, but they're more winter range. And so it's one of these situations where we probably need to get creative and figure out new avenues to do some deer permit stuff. You know, in the statewide plan, deer plan, it talks about potentially adding a second rifle hunt. And this is something that we're going to look at this summer pretty heavily. I mean, no promises. That's not my recommendation tonight, but it's a... You know, on units like this, and you know, the 9 Mile, you look at the southeast region as well, they've got another unit there the same way, where it's just a lot of these areas are private land dominated. Makes sense. When Utah was settled, tended to settle the areas with water and cover and pretty good spots. So.
Right, but don't get me wrong. I mean, that's where I hunt, and so I don't need any more competition. But it just seems like there's just a real surplus of, especially older bucks. It's very impressive.
Yeah. These units have some challenges, sure.
Hey, Justin. Got a question for you. Was looking at the Central Mountains NEBO unit for elk, limited entry elk.
Okay.
Notice, you didn't present this, but the population trend is increasing year over year. We're cutting tags year over year. 2014, we're at 75 tags. This year, we're recommending 52. But the age objective on that unit, or the age classification, or the average age of harvest is not going up. In fact, it seems to be kind of trending downward. Do we know what's going on with the elk on that unit and why that age is trending down?
You know, this one, the NEBO one's an interesting one. I'll give you the answer at a statewide level, but if anyone wants to weigh in on the NEBO at the local level, that's fine. It seems like in some of these areas when we get to a point where the age objective is lower than what we want and we do some cuts, it seems like on the NEBO we've taken an approach of incremental cuts, and we've done it on some other units as well, and I think it takes a long time when you do incremental cuts to get there. You look at Mount Dutton and Panguitch Lake, for instance. You know, these are units a year ago where we made pretty big cuts. We went from 100 to 75 and 80 to 55. It wasn't like, let's just cut 8 permits and see what happens. And I think on some of these units, you have to, when you're trending down, I think you have to make some pretty big cuts to get out ahead of it. You know, the NEBO's one where we've just consistently cut, almost in proportion to... We didn't take a big swing at it, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
But I don't know. Does anyone region-wise have anything they want to... Dennis, you want to tackle that?
I think you explained it pretty well. Like, they're below the age objective, so it only makes sense to reduce the connection. Like you said, that we're going small increments.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a
dead
science.
Yeah. Right. No, and I get that. But what I'm wondering is, you've got this... All the units around it,
yeah,
there are a lower age objective. And now we're expanding the seasons. You know, we've got the late hunts, that sort of thing, so bulls are moving around. It'll be interesting to see if we can ever get to that age objective, just maybe some unique things going on there with elk moving around, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, you know, we might have to look at that strategy down the road of the age objectives.
You know, one thing that goes along with this is we are looking at some data today, too, and some of these are hard to explain. You know, I think in some areas we've stockpiled bulls for so long. And so you look at it and you say, hold on a sec, we have more permits on that unit with fewer elk. How are we harvesting an older age class bull? And it's really hard because we're dealing with current snapshot time right now. But we're talking about recommendations over the last decade that have either stockpiled bulls or allowed for more of those to be taken in the harvest. And so, you know, a lot of these units on the surface don't add up, but it's because they have history and their population dynamics aren't equal, even though there's the same number of elk and on some of these units in some cases, and we're harvesting older bulls in one and not the other. There's a lot more to it than just what we're seeing tonight.
Okay. Thanks. I appreciate it.
I just wanted to say something on that. I know, Chris, maybe 10, 15 years ago, they were hitting that objective way, way over that objective, and they doubled the permits, and they're still climbing out of that now. And I don't know. Hopefully it'll work, what you're doing. So.
I've got a quick question as well. On the once in a lifetime on the moose, on Chalk Creek, you cut it from 3 to 2. Just wondering what's the science behind that? Because I hunt up in that area, so I have a very familiar idea that if I see 5 bulls on one property,
yeah,
I wonder how many are on other properties, or am I just in the honey hole?
I'd have to go pull up the justification. I don't remember that one off the top of my head. I apologize. But generally on these moose ones, we manage for a 4 to 6 year old bull. And so I think for the most part, when they see that coming down in age, or in some cases we're under it, you know, we're 3.5 years old, I'd have to go look at the data on the moose one. I don't have a good answer for you right now. But I can pull it at the break and snag you if you'd like. Or
that's fine. I was just curious about
okay.
that. Because I had, the last 2 years in a row, I've seen, you know, obviously some that would hit that class.
Yeah.
But also some smaller bulls, too. So I just wondered where we were looking at and what the science was behind that area, because I know it's really, with all the property being private up in that region, it's pretty tough to to get in and out and all that stuff as well. But
maybe we can pull an age. Kobe, do you have computer? Can we look at the age stuff? Or do I have your computer?
Yeah, mine.
Oh, this is great. Riley, you want to? Can you look up the moose age on the which unit? Chalk Creek?
Yeah, on Chalk Creek.
Yeah. So I'll pull up the justification, look at the break, but we'll
okay. I'm just curious because it just seemed if I hadn't seen any, I would agree with you.
Justin, could you talk a little bit more about the Book Cliffs and the bison? I mean, that's the other big jump that you see in all those slides.
They're just doing really well. We're recommending a cow hunt for the first time, and that population was established in 08, I think, and it's doing well and it's growing, and it's kind of exciting time to see that those animals do so well that we can be this aggressive and not feel like we're going to slow that growth very much. On the 9 mile Range Creek was added to the actually the 9 mile unit was added to the Wild Horse Bench area, and that's because in some areas we have bison that are swimming the Green River and setting up refuge on the 9 mile unit, and so this is a way to allocate efforts to where these bison are at. Even though they're off the unit, we created a mechanism to harvest some of that. And so, bison are like elk; they'll respond to hunting pressure and be good to get some of these back over the river. But other than that, the unit's doing great, really good.
I got a follow-up question.
So, Justin, going back to that Central Mountains Nebo. How many more years is it going to take for you guys, do you think, to reach that age objective? And if you don't get there, when would you consider revising that age objective to a lower age?
For me, this one's hard because if you look at 2016, I thought we were heading in a pretty good direction. You went 5.6 to 6 and then suddenly 5.3. And there's a lot that goes into that. On units like... Sometimes it depends who draws these tags. If you get a batch of people that draw these tags and happy to shoot a lower quality bull versus people that hold out to shoot a higher quality bull, you see some of that. Chris, that goes back to your question as well, why the fluctuations.
With all those factors into consideration, I mean, just how many more years are you guys going to, going to work this until you get that? Or, because DWR with populations, if you don't get to the population objective, you just change the population objective. So why would it be any different with age objective?
Ouch. I guess we're going there tonight.
Wait till we get to the antler list.
Yeah, it'll be a long... This will be a fun night. I think it's one where we went and changed... The age objective. I think what we do, I mean, that's set in the plan, and when we put these objectives, everybody that worked on that elk plan knew there was a lot of give and take. For me, I think it would be more of a conversation about having a bigger cut in permits to see some progress there sooner, and that's probably the approach that we would take. So,
over the course of 3-4 years?
Yeah, and we've been trickling down quite a while, but just incrementally. I mean, 3-4 years ago. Dennis, how many tags did we have on this unit 3 years ago? Do you remember? Sorry, what was that?
75.
Yeah, so I mean, going from 75 to 52, I mean, cutting that by, I mean, a third of the permits essentially in a 3-year period, it's been done incrementally, but in totality, that's a lot of permits that have been cut. So, sorry, who's cut? 3.7 on the moose. So we dip below that 4, and that's probably why we cut one permit. Yeah. And in all fairness, I am going to stick up for myself here for a minute. With the antlerless stuff, we have made progress on a lot of these antlerless elk units. We'll talk about that next. But changing the objective, I think that's a fallacy. I'm not convinced we just change objectives because we can't get there. I think that it's a lot more complicated than that. But we'll hit that next topic. This will be good.
Justin, I just go on record. I agree with you that there is a different level of expectation from people who draw these permits and what they're willing to the harvest.
Yeah.
And that can skew your numbers because some people are totally happy with a 300 bull.
Yeah.
And so if that happens, it's obviously going to lower those numbers down.
And that's, you know, with the deer plan and the elk plan, Ron, I'm really glad that's why we, there was a lot of consensus on, well, I guess consensus, but there was, there wasn't a lot of consensus. You either have it or you don't. There was consensus on the three-year average. I mean, that, and that's why, so we didn't have to overreact or underreact. So, Ben.
Ben.
Justin, back on the bison, just real quick. What's the population objective on that buck Cliff's herd?
450, if I remember right.
Is that, that's the same on the Henrys too, right?
Henrys is 325 adults.
Oh, 320. Okay, yeah. So we've actually have a bigger population objective on the.
Yeah, and I think long term, we're you know, because of that, as we approach 450, we're going to see a lot more permits to take care of that recruitment that was coming. You know, you have to offset that with harvest.
Yeah.
And I actually think it's a great time for bison hunters, those people that have been in that hunter pool, because we're going to gain some momentum with bison permits.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very exciting. What is our current population on the books?
Oh, it's, you know, it's a tough one because I can't remember the last time we flew it. I'm going off memory, but off the cuff, I'd say about 250.
Okay.
And so we're making some good progress. So.
Okay. Yeah. All right, thanks.
Ben, if it's different than that, I'll let you know. So.
Any other questions from the rack?
Kobe, can you text Clint and see what that population estimate is on the book list? We can answer it tonight. So.
Okay. Seeing no more questions from the rack, we'll throw it out to the public. Any questions you have on the presentation, just come up to the mic and... Okay, nothing there. Okay, I have two cards of people that would like to comment on the presentation. First, Randy Quayle.
Thank you. My name's Randy Quell, here for, representing the Utah Bowman's Association. First, I'd like to thank all you board members for being here. I know it's pretty time-consuming, and our passion's all the same for wildlife and conservation, I hope, or we wouldn't be here. UBA would like to concur with the recommendations for the with the DWR's recommendations for the permits as they are, as they were presented, both once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations, and I don't think we've got to the antler list yet, I don't believe. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you. We have a couple more cards. Darren and Dave, would you like to both come up and make a comment, or just want me to read what you've got? Come on up, Dave.
Dave Woodhouse. I'm representing Sportsman Fish and Wildlife tonight. And our membership just wanted to support the recommendations of the division on this Bucks Bowls once in a lifetime, too. And then I'll also throw something in on the Nebo. You know, it's just a tough hunt. And a lot of the people, because I know a lot of them, that are getting some of those elk, just aren't hunting that hard and taking easier bowls and that age class isn't going up. Plus, I think a lot of them are going to the, crossing over to the Manti to chase cows over there.
So. Okay. Thanks, Dave. Darren West.
I am Darren West. I'm the Utah Conservation Coordinator with the Mule Deer Foundation. I'd like to thank you all on the rack for taking a few minutes to listen to what we've got to say. We, as the Mule Deer Foundation, accept the division's recommendations for the limited entry deer and general season deer permits, as well as strongly approve the recommendations to reduce permits on box elder, cache, and Ogden. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Darren. Any other comments anyone would like to? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the rack for your discussion. Any motions that you'd like to make? Chris?
I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve the recommendations as presented on this agenda item.
Okay, we have a motion. We have a second. Matt Clark, second. Okay. Okay, let's vote. All in favor of the recommendations and proposal that the division put forth, raise your hand, please. Okay, it appears unanimous. Okay, good. Okay, analyst recommendations. Justin, you're up.
Thank you. Tonight I'm going to present the analyst recommendations for 2017. So again, we'll begin with deer. I showed this in the last graph for bucks, bulls, once in a lifetime, but again, just want to reiterate a slight dip in fawn production this last fall. If you look at our statewide survival rates, this is one of my favorite graphs to present every year. On the y-axis, you have just your percentage of adult of survival from 0 to 100, and on the x-axis you have all the years that we've been doing this. So we've been catching deer and radio collaring them on 7 different units throughout the state since 2010. It's given us some really good information. 2010, 2011, our fawn survival wasn't great there in the grain. It was average. You know, anything around 50 is fine. It's good. And we had a increase to about 80% for about 4 years in a row. And that's where you can really see that we brought a lot of deer into the system. And this last year, it dropped pretty good to 43. So not alarming, not over the top, but just not what we've had the previous 4 years. Adult survival, generally in this regard, you want to be about, you know, low to mid-80s. This last year, it took a little dip from about 83% to just above 80%. Statewide. So this just gives you an indication of how our deer did with that difficult winter we talked about in the Bucks Bulls presentation and with antler and some of the drought conditions. If you look at the statewide deer population trends, our objective is 453,000. Part of this is changes with some of the deer unit plans that were presented over the last couple of years. As you can see, we've peaked and valleyed our way from highs and lows, and anybody that knows deer know they're going to cycle. And again, you look at the last 5 years, just we grew 100,000 deer in the state, and it was phenomenal. In this last year, with those survival rates and the production and everything else that goes into this, we estimate we lost about 10,000 deer in the state. So again, not just a decrease, and certainly a different direction from where we've been going. Looking at public draw permits for antlerless deer, 2010, we had a lot of them, and then we really backed off the public draw antlerless permits. And this year, recommending a pretty good increase from 755 to 1,470. If you look at these permits, the reason we have them are they're designed to address depredation concerns and rangeland health concerns. And in the southern region, where we've really seen some increases in our deer populations, we're trying to address both of these, mostly more heavy on depredation, though. So if you look on the graphs here, on the tables, on the Bevo, we're recommending a slight reduction in permits and increases on the Monroe through the Pine Valley in those southern region areas. The new hunts, a couple on the Monroe, a few on the Pine Valley, the Monroe Plateau Angle, a couple on the Plateau unit there, and another one on Zion, Northwest Zion. And then we're doing a slight boundary change to the Pine Valley Enterprise. And these hunts are good because they're designed to harvest deer that are causing problems with our agricultural producers and the depredation situations we have. But they're extended out to where there's public land involved, to where public hunters can get these deer that are coming in and out of the fields up on the benches. So. Moving on to elk, And statewide population trends, current objective is 78,215. If you look at the last 4 or 5 years, elk populations have really stabilized. In the last 3 years, we've declined every year. So our current estimate is 77,730, just shy of our population objective there. If you look at the public draw permits from 2010 to 2017, it's just a perfect distribution. I'm sure a stats professor somewhere is thinking, wow, this is really good. This is really neat. But what we learned in 2012 and 2013 is we were adding a lot more permits to these systems and to these hunts. And, we're an agency that's constantly evolving and trying to improve. What we found is sometimes you add a lot more permits and you don't increase harvest. You just decrease hunter success rates and hunter satisfaction. And so we thought long and hard. I think 2013 was a good year for us to say, why do we have such low success rates on some of these hunts? And we need new tools, and we need to think outside the box and get creative. And every year since then, we've decreased public draw permits, yet we've still lowered our population estimates, which has been good. Higher success rates, and it's really hats off to a lot of the biologists that are thinking creatively and trying to do some new things. This year, we're recommending a decrease of about 3,850 permits from close to 13,700 to just over 9,800. If you break it down by region, units on the left, population objective, this is what we're managing to, the current estimate. Last year's permits there in the second to right column, and then what we're recommending tonight. So we're recommending decreases in permits on the Bucks Elder, the Ogden, and the Morgan Southridge, and increases on the cash unit for elk. And also we're doing a name change. There's two boundaries on the cash, and they're different. One's for deer and one's for elk. And so we're calling renaming this elk one Cash East to avoid confusion. Central region, recommending increases on the Nebo, another 100 permits there, and another 400 permits on the Wasatch Mountains West. And this will be, we're recommending this as a muzzleloader hunt that would run from November 1st through November 9th. And again, we've got some long-term strategies to keep elk off balance, and I'll show some of that at the end of this presentation with what we've done with private lands permits and the whole conversation of trying to keep elk uncomfortable on these areas that they've sought refuge before. And so that's the why behind that recommendation. New hunts, there's one more on the Wasatch Mountains West Central, that's the muzzleloader only hunt, and a name change. Again, this is one where it's not our goal to confuse the public, and sometimes we do it. We have a Wasatch Mountains West hunt for deer, and then we have another one for elk, and they're different boundaries. And so we're going to rename this one Wasatch Mountains West Central to avoid that confusion if you happen to have both permits in the same hunt name. Southern region, pretty much decreases throughout most of those units except for increases on the Mount Dutton and the Fish Lake Thousand Lakes unit there. And again, on the population objective, on some of these, the elk, they don't respect our arbitrary boundaries that we drew for them, and so they go all over. And so on the Monroe, Dutton, Fish Lake, and Boulder, Kaparowitz, we manage to arrange, and that's the new strategy there with their unit plans. Southern region recommending new hunts on Beaver North, Beaver East, the Mount Dutton Plateau, the Plateau Center for Last Chance Desert, and Hatch Bend there on the Ponsagunt. And again, another name change on Fillmore Oak Creek. Southeast region, recommending decreases in permits on the San Juan and the Central Mountains Manti. On the San Juan, we'd already mailed out the rack packet. And so on your rack packet, you have two San Juan hunts for antlerless elk. We're recommending tonight eliminating those. I didn't want to resend out a new rack packet and some of that stuff. And so if you adopt the recommendation tonight, that would do away with 150 permits on that unit, and this would be the recommendation that you'd be approving. A new hunt on the Central Mountains Farron Canyon Southeast, and a boundary change on Moreland Stump Flat. And then finally, the Northeast region. Decreases in permits on the Yellowstone, Diamond Mountain, 9 Mile Anthro, and no permits on the current creek or Aviniquin. And again, we're looking at new strategies with private lands only permits and some of those things over on those units, which is why the decrease in permits there. So those are the public draw permits. In addition, we have antler assault control permits, which is an over-the-counter one, and a private lands only permit. Antler assault control, it's a permit that you can purchase and use if you have a bucks bull or once-in-a-lifetime permit, and you have to use the same weapon type, hunt during the same season dates and areas of overlap with the same boundary if you have that permit. Private lands only, this is the one that we tried this year for the first time. These permits are valid on private property from August 1st to January 31st on select units using any weapon. So if you look at antler assault control permits, last year we had this on 11 units, sold about 4,000 permits, harvested almost 500 elk. Not a great success rate, but in many pockets, it's units that we're managing for zero elk, and so it's an opportunity hunt. If you're out there and you have one of these permits, you can get one if you see one. And tonight we're recommending adding the Camas for a new hunt there and a boundary change to the San Juan unit. On private lands only permits, again, these are the ones we tried this last year for the first time. Sold about 2,800 of them, harvested 1,500 elk, and a 52% success rate. We got feedback lots of ways, but a lot of people that we heard from, especially at the local level in the regions, the landowners liked it because if they wanted elk, they could have them. If they didn't want elk, they could go get a permit and deal with those challenges. And the hunters that had access, they liked it too. It got a lot of good feedback on those. And it simplified obtaining permits to harvest cows on private lands. In Northeast region in particular, it really helped them minimize their depredation challenges that they had this year. And they had a lot of snow up there. And really, it is helping us redistribute elk on the landscape. So with that, we're recommending 8,790 permits this year and adding the Nebo, Mount Dutton, Panguitch Lake, and Zion units to these areas. So in summary, we're simply modifying the way that we hunt cow elk in Utah. As part of the statewide elk plan, what we're doing is decreasing public draw permits, increasing the number of antler assault control units for this year, and an increase in the number of units that are offering these private lands only permits. And again, the goal behind this is if elk are seeking refuge on private land and they're comfortable there, that makes it harder for the public land hunters that draw these permits. And so we're trying to shift that distribution to make elk not feel comfortable on these private lands and increase success rates and satisfaction rates to public hunters. Moving on to doe pronghorn, recommending an increase of 120 permits from 630 to 750. These increases would be on the Mount Dutton Ponsagat unit and two of the Box Elder units. A couple new hunts on Box Elder are being proposed, Mount Dutton Ponsagat and the Plateau Parker Mountain. We're keeping the same amount of permits there, but we're shuffling some of these hunts around, trying a timing issue there. Antlerless moose, really not a lot of movement from last year, just increasing two permits on the Ogden West, which has a population that's still growing and doing well. And that's all I have. I think for this rack, though, I'm going to show one more slide if that's okay. These are radio collared elk that we have on the Wasatch. I think we've radio collared about 350 over the last couple of years. And on the x-axis of these graphs, on the y-axis, this is the percentage of elk that have been on public land. And as you can see, this one on the far left is 2015. And so in the summer, we had about 75% of the elk that are on public land. And so the sportsmen are out there and they're scouting and they're seeing elk in some of these areas. But then when the hunts start, these elk are gone. And this was the conversation that we've had for several years with sportsmen, even at this rack, outside of the rack, for a long time. And it seems like once the hunts start, look at how abruptly these elk move from public land to private land. And during the rifle deer hunt, you have 25% of your collared elk on private land. And so just a complete shift in distribution. And then it's interesting to me that as soon as the hunts are over, look at how many of them go back up to public land, half of them, more than half. And so that was 2015. On the right, it's the same graph, but this is where we tried private lands only permits on the Wasatch. And we pulled some of this pressure off the public land and applied some pressure on the private land. And as you can see, it still drops. They're still seeking refuge on private land. We didn't solve that in a year, but it got better. You know, it wasn't 25% of the collared elk moving to private land, about 37-38%. You know, 12%. You know, how much do we celebrate that? I don't know, but it's progress, and I think that's going to help our public draw hunters in the future. And I know we're recommending cuts on public draw permits tonight, but in the not too distant future, we're going to ask for these permits back. And when we do, elk are going to have less areas of refuge on private land because of the hunting pressure, and people will know that system and permits, and then public hunters will have a more enjoyable hunt. So it's good to see some progress, is what I'm saying. And that's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I forget. Who asked the bison question? Was that you, Ben? The current estimate's about 300 bison on the book list.
Okay, awesome. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Justin. Questions? Ben?
Yep. Justin, on the San Juan units that you had mentioned, so I just looked at those. We got, there's two San Juans and a San Juan North Elk Ridge.
Yeah.
You're saying that the recommendation tonight is to eliminate the two San Juan units and keep the North Elk Ridge.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yeah, that North Elk Ridge one is an important one to keep. We've been working with the Forest Service to do a bunch of habitat restoration projects there. And so that's an area that we want hunting pressure. We want to harvest elk or haze them out of that area. Yeah.
Okay. And the other two were in the original recommendation but are being eliminated now. And what? Tell me again why that is.
Yeah. Once we sent the RAC packet out, we were still working through some things. And this falls on me. I should be better with my deadlines. But we met with some of the sportsmen and some of the landowners in San Juan County. And we looked at it. We're 300 elk under objective there, and it was just. And we're going to fly it this next year. And there's some concerns that there's not a lot of cows on that unit. That's what the sportsmen are seeing. It's what a lot of landowners are seeing. And so we figured if we cut those 150 permits this year, we're going to fly it in a year. And if we're wrong, we'll throw a few more permits at it next year. If we're right and the elk aren't there, it's probably better not to continue with that level of harvest.
Sure. So, how often do you fly that unit, and how successful are the flights on that unit?
Yeah, so we fly. We try to fly every unit every 3 years. Some units are harder than others because if you don't get the snow conditions, we won't fly it. These flights are a lot of money, and to go fly on patchy snow and get a questionable number doesn't do us or the public any favors. And I think the last time we flew this was 2014. So.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions, Larry?
Justin, what is the objective for elk in the Vernon?
I think we were just talking about that. Is it zero, Tom? Elk objective on the Vernon? Yeah, so zero.
Zero objective.
Yeah.
My question is, why wouldn't we do the private land tag on the Vernon if the objective is zero, to use every tool we have to try to get the elk number? So there.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I don't know if we have a great argument for not having it, unless Tom wants to take a crack at it.
We didn't consider it mostly because it was a pilot program on the Wasatch, but at the time when we started looking into it, wasn't set up for the Vernon, in that we don't have a lot of private land that are harboring elk, and that was I think what we were trying to do was get elk off of the private lands, and the private landowners out there have been allowing access, so it's not seeing elk being harbored on private lands that we needed to do that. I'm not opposed to it.
Well,
it was kind of a pilot program that.
Well, it's a pilot program that worked well in the.
Well, we know that it worked well now, but we didn't know when we started it.
But the elk population in the Vernon is expanding quite rapidly. And
we did pretty well with our control permits. we had 30 cows killed, and the second highest.
I have 30 cows living behind my house. I have more than that living behind my house in the Vernon right
but
now.
But it was also the first year of our control permit, so.
Yeah, that's true. Hopefully, but why, the objective is zero, so why wouldn't we try to take every means possible to keep it at zero and make it an opportunity, a more of an opportunity hunt for the public? I have a list of landowners that are more than willing to give written permission to the public to hunt their private lands.
Exactly, and we have control permits to do that. But again,
but
I'm not
that control permit is only for the season
that they have a permit for.
And the these private land tags would be a longer season.
But it would only be on the private land.
That's true. It would only be on the private land. But these elk are approaching Vernon, the hayfields. They're approaching. They're on Mitchell's. Their hayfields.
I haven't seen them or heard them. They're here.
That's the reason why they're here. They're concerned.
Yeah, and then, I would be too.
Then the concern of the transport of or transplant of elk out on the Stansberries. The Vernon is, they're worried about their deer population also, not just about.
Which is why we put the control permits on.
Yes.
We tried cow hunts and they weren't working.
I'll read the names in the comment period, but you guys are not opposed to adding that to the private.
I'm not opposed to it at all, but it was why it wasn't thought of because it was.
It was brought up late, so it
was
wasn't really
late,
discussed.
It was also, I never heard from any landowners that they were harboring elk that they wanted to remove. I know Frank allows 20,000 acres, allows...
Frank's harboring elk. He's number one on my list here.
Again, I've not heard from any landowners other than yourself.
Okay, well, hopefully we'll hear from some tonight.
If you want to go private landowner permits, I'm not opposed to it.
All right, thanks for coming.
So, Tom, is it too late, or Justin, is it too late to add that, to add some private land only permits to that Vernon for elk?
No, that's what you guys are voting on.
Okay.
Make a recommendation.
Okay, we can make a recommendation. So from a Forest Service standpoint, we really see that Vernon as a core mule deer unit. We don't see it as an elk unit, and I hope the public doesn't misinterpret my stance on elk tonight, but I don't have nothing against elk, but I just don't see Vernon as having elk. I think we need to manage that for mule deer.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think if the RAC decides to go that route and add Vernon to the private lands only permit, I think the next discussion would probably be how many permits we would want on that unit. So, Tom, I don't know if you want to get with Riley and work out a number that we could recommend, but, that would be the next step for the RAC is, do you want it, yay or nay, and then how many permits should we issue?
Start small.
Sure.
Start small, maybe a couple hundred.
Yeah. Well, it's gonna be a low percentage hunt, but the people that are going to buy these tags are going to realize that. But, you guys are offering and willing to give me vouchers for my own private land, but those don't work. They only work on. So if you give me a bunch of vouchers and I pass them people, they can only hunt my own private land. But with this tag, they could hunt my land, they could hunt Vincent's land. Frank Vincent, he's the largest landowner in Vernon. I think he owns close to 20,000 acres. And he said, I will welcome public hunters on my land. And that's a heck of an opportunity for the public. We have a list of 12 others on here, too. And they all have stated they will welcome, with written permission, they will welcome hunters on their private lands. Okay, you go, Riley.
If I may, for just a second, because Tom and I have talked about that, and we agree with you, and we're not opposed to adding, and I don't think a couple hundred is out of the question. I think part of our concern is we have an avenue as well to solve elk on private lands, outside of private lands only tags, and that is through our depredation and mitigation permits. that also allows us to, A, use a buffer to extend that a little bit past your property, and we can have liberal hunt dates. The reason why we were looking towards those mitigation permits to solve that issue is because our biggest fear, and it may not be yours, you may not worry about that, is that we offer 200 private lands only permits, they sell, and then they go and hunt on private land and don't see an elk. However, with a mitigation permit, when you had it, you could go and buy it. And I guess you have that possibility as well, but we are not opposed to it, and I don't think that 200 permits, like you said, is outlandish. I think that's right where we're at. It was talked about only due to the fact that there were other avenues to address elk on private property.
You say you have the tools and other avenues to decrease this herd in the Vernon, but all it has done over the years has increased, and this would be an opportunity for the public. I don't know of maybe any the landowners I talk to. Well, I can't state all because I didn't bring up the financial part of it. But there would be no trespass fee. It would be an opportunity. It would be a longer hunt for the season. It would solve the problem of the depredation that's coming. If nothing's done, do you see how much depredation do you foresee in the future in the Vernon?
You know,
I think it will be very devastating.
Well, you know, Tom and I get up and try to explain why it wasn't recommended in the past, but both of us have said we're not opposed to doing it, and and we're not opposed to the numbers that you brought up. There is on an area where the elk are limited, and we're not talking about units like the Wasatch or the Manti, but in the Vernon, where you don't see elk all over the place.
It's going to be a very low percentage hunt, and the people will realize that.
Right, and so there is that potential to address that need with depredation permits, where that might not exist on other units. So that is why that thought process hasn't been directly to add those hunts in, but neither one of us, and Tom wasn't opposed to doing it.
Okay.
I just didn't see landowners part of the
But if you guys feel that that is necessary and is a tool you'd like to go, we're not against that. We think that that's a reasonable recommendation.
Okay.
The difference was the Wasatch private lands, which cut off all hunting.
Yes.
And on the Vernon, that's not really the case. And so the harboring and moving the belt was not as much an issue as it is in the Wasatch. And that's kind of the way it evolved as far as the private lands go. But if you want to try them on the Vernon.
Just in my eyes, it's another tool to get to your objective, and the objective is zero.
And we're not opposed to that. So.
Right. Let me ask you something. Is there a difference in the tags whether it has to be an antlerless animal?
Yeah.
Okay. So bulls are not included in this discussion.
But it's an open bull unit, and so...
So they can still go on there and do that.
Hunt that during the appropriate bull season.
Okay. Thanks, Larry.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Matt.
So, Justin, was the 2,795 private permits just for this region that were sold, or was that statewide?
Yeah, so that was statewide, and it was for these units in white here. Yeah, so everything in white, that's what that was for. And we offered, I think we offered close to 12,000 total permits. We had no idea how much interest would occur, and a lot of these units, we didn't want to run out of permits. You know, we figured if it comes October and you have a bunch of landowners that have issues, we want them to be able to get a permit. And so we shot high, cutting that back a little bit more to reality.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions from the rack? George?
So, Justin, I have the fortune of having an ex-DWR biologist on my staff here for the last couple of months and for the next month here, and went over the Central Mountains NEBO numbers and just don't feel comfortable with the 250.
Okay.
You know, I don't know what your success rate, but estimating that at 50%, we just see recruitment outbeating that number, that population continuing to grow. That's one unit. I'm telling you, man, I fear the day that the population objective gets increased because we can't meet the current population objective of 1450. And so I'd really like to see an increase in the antlerless permits.
We're going from 100 to 200, and you said 250?
Well, if you add in the private land ones, that's 250. You look at a 50% success rate, you're only looking at taking 125 animals out of that whole unit. Your recruitment's going to exceed that.
Well, 125 cows before mitigation and depredation and those types of things. So, okay. Yeah. I don't know. Does the region want to address that at all? Yeah.
When did they fly that last?
George, that was another one that we brought up and had a lot of maybe heartburn about, because I think off the top of the page you look at that and you're exactly right. I think there are a few things that come up with that. We offer a lot of tags and a lot of opportunity with depredation on the Nebo and the surrounding area. I think the other worry that we had is we had a very, very good count this year due to the weather. And we were fearful that we were, maybe fearful is the wrong word, but we believe we might have been counting some animals that are typically not associated with only the Nebo, and maybe got a little bit of migration from the Wasatch or from the Manti. And so we didn't want to bombard the unit with an extra ordinary amount of cow tags when we think that we might be taking on some animals elsewhere. So we've talked with Dennis, I have talked at length about this, and due to the fact that we are still going to give out plenty of depredation permits and have the opportunity to address how we did next year, we thought that throwing a conservative increase at it this year would be appropriate.
Do you want to know the number that was given to me to just to break even?
Yeah,
750 permits.
Right. You're
break even on population.
But again, George, we were assuming that we weren't counting only Nebo elk. I mean, we had this year especially, we had so much snow up high in the elevations that surrounded them that we were able to count so many more elk down low that we were counting in areas that may not only be Nebo elk. And so, like I said, when you first look at the recommendation on the screen, I don't disagree with you, but 250 permits doesn't tell the entire story because of the depredation permits that we give. And it also, if we are looking at that additional elk from the surrounding units, that will be telling, and we'll be able to address that. We were conservative on the number that went out, but we were for those reasons.
They're actually probably coming from the Nebo, aren't they?
No.
They came in through Nephi.
Nephi through the Tinix. I mean,
the Tinix.
Dennis may be a better one to answer that question.
Through Dog Valley, through Verner Valley, over into Tinix. Then they moved into Cherry Creek. And
the animals on the Vernon came from the Nebo.
So,
I don't think so, because there's I-15 that separates the two.
Well, they used to cross there all the time. That was a big kill area from Mona to Nephi. I don't know.
Richard, what do you think?
No. They don't cross that I-15 corridor anymore.
I don't think they do.
I mean, it's high fenced. There's a couple places they go across, you know, maybe under, but you rarely... Much you see is deer going across those overpasses and underpasses.
But they used to.
They might have used to.
But that's,
but since I-15, this doesn't happen. They're really...
Because the elk we're getting out in the Vernon are coming from the east headed west. And I don't know how far the Nebo goes down. Is that the mountain range in between?
Just out past. Well, it's down to Gunnison.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're causing the problem. I mean, there may be occasional one that does something, but I doubt
I don't think
anything you could measure.
I don't think
well, they're growing in our country anyway.
Yeah.
I think we had some come off the Okers
probably about 10 years ago. But we also see a push up in the Fillmore and along the Gills and so on.
Yeah. And
they're crossing by the center of Sanders there, the Jericho.
That, okay, if they may, probably came that way. But you have elk in Cedar Valley now. And that's the first time they've been spotted in Cedar Valley.
No. They've been wintering coming off the Ogres.
No, I meant...
which Cedar Valley are you talking about?
Cedar Valley, South Cedar Valley, Allen's Ranch. We've had elk coming off the Ogres into the Thorpe Hills and the Toplift Hills for years. But they always turn around.
That ridge from
but these elk come up from like towards the sand dunes. Come into the Dry Lake area, into Black Rock area. Now they're into Cedar Valley. I don't know if they'll summer into that area. They did summer up in the Dry Lake area and Black Rock area last summer. So, well, okay.
That same ridge that component is all the way up.
Yeah. I was just trying to stop you. Okay. Thank you, Tom.
I'd just like to say something. I think it's a good move on the Nebo to be kind of cautious about bumping that antlerless harvest up too quickly, too much, because I know, and we've done it for years, we know that a lot of those elk cross 89 to go down there in winter, and so it's possible there's a mix of ones that come across from there. So, and there's not as many elk as up there as there was 15 years ago, I can tell you that right now. That's just my own observation, but so I think that's a good idea, and with the private land tags too, I think that's going to make a difference too. So,
Justin, I have a quick question. If the objective on the burn-in is zero,
yeah, correct.
And I know Larry said that a lot of landowners would let him do the antlerless on there and do those. Last time I checked, it took a bull and a cow to make another one. So, what are we doing with the bulls? I realize that, but that's on public land or on private land? Both, right? And so the reality of it is, if we really want a zero objective, we should be shooting both of them, shouldn't we?
Yeah, and that's just it. We give amp. Anybody can go get a permit for a bull and hunt public or private land already. Yeah, and cows same way now. So, I think the bull thing, we have avenues to get harvest there.
Okay, I just wanted to, and I understand where he's coming from because he's had a lot of problems with cows and different things and what it's doing to his property, and I get that. I'm just saying, to really eliminate that, you pretty well got to eliminate everything.
Sure.
So, and I realize that not all bulls get shot during the season, so that's why I was wondering.
They won't let us have private lands bull tags. That's
you understand where I'm coming then from.
Yeah, but I'm not anti-elk. I just think the number has to be kept in check. It's everybody, you know, a lot of people think I'm anti-elk, but I'm not. I enjoy hunting elk, and later on you'll understand why. But I'm not anti-elk. But my fear is for the farmers of Vernon, the hay farmers. There's over by the rest area. There's that guy raising hay there now. He had a huge. He's out of the Vernon, but I should have asked him about that. He would have supported this, but he is actually out of the Vernon unit, just by the highway.
Well, we all know that once elk find the alfalfa, it's gone. So, yeah. I mean, that's just going to happen. And so, I guess the point of it is that if we're going to try to obtain that objective, then I'm not against trying to help them out with doing something similar to what he wants to try as well, just to try to control that a little bit better than what we're doing already.
Thanks.
Any other questions from the RAC? Okay, any questions from the public on the presentation? You come up, state your name, and fill a little card out for us if you make a comment. Go ahead.
Do I need to fill out a card?
No, you're fine. Go ahead, right now.
My name is Elizabeth Mitchell from Benmore, Utah. We are the private farm embedded in that Forest Service ground up there. And Tom forgot, but a couple of years ago we did tell him about some elk that were coming on our place. We saw hoof prints of some. We saw a couple of other sightings, and then the fire crew that was working on a controlled burn that wasn't very controlled by us. And they saw about eight. And so Larry said, call Tom and get some depredation tags and get rid of those. And well, we saw them in the spring, and then they went somewhere else. And so by the time, I'm not a hunter, sorry, by the time the elk hunt came along, there were none to show Tom. And so that that is something to consider. Maybe shoot him when you see him. Can you write a tag for that? And then I can't remember what else I was going to say. I'm kind of nervous, but am I supposed to say something else, Larry? Get up here and finish for me.
You can explain how elusive these elk are. They are.
Yeah.
It's species sign, more sign. That's why I say it'll be a very low percentage high, but it does make the elk
more than people. Oh, I know what else I was going to say. Maybe these private land tags, maybe people won't find them. So maybe you could sell them at a reduced rate so they're not so irritated.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the public? Okay, any comments from the public? I have one card. Randy Quayle from the Atlas.
Hello again. The Utah Bowman's Association is in agreement with the DWR's proposal as is for the antlerless permits. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Ryan. Any other comments from the public? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring her back to the rack for their discussion and decision.
I've got a comment.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, Justin, one thing that I think comes out of these private property permits that hasn't really been discussed much, and that is that it's building a relationship between these landowners and hunters. I've experienced this already. It's building a relationship between these entities, and even more than a relationship. I mean, when you can break bread, you know, that's quality, you know. If the landowner can get some meat out of it, which typically happens, that's kind of a quid pro quo. that's a good win-win relationship for not just the hunter but also the landowner himself. And it is a bit good old boy, I realize, but by the same token, those relationships can go on for years and years and years. And so I think this is a really positive thing, and I'm excited. Not only from the numbers that you presented there, pushing the critters back on public lands, but also just the whole mentality of the whole thing. I really appreciate what the division's doing.
Go ahead, Larry.
I just wanted to read some of the names of the landowners that think this would be a good thing for the Vernon. I can go through the names if you want me to. Would that be wise?
Yeah, go ahead.
Frank Vincent, Liz Now Mitchell, this is Elizabeth Mitchell over here, Scott Livingston and the Vernon Beef Project, Dave, Don, Jim, and Bob Gowns, Charlie Larson, Pete Costino, Theo Berry, and Chance Lyman, Scott Pearson, Greg Jasperson, and myself, Larry Fitzgerald. And I actually have a personal stake in the Vernon. I don't know if I'm not going to make any financial gain on this, but it might be wise for me to abstain from the vote. And so I hope, and it might be better if somebody, anybody here agrees with what I've said, makes the recommendation. So I will abstain from the vote out of just
Understand. Okay. Thank you, Larry. Okay, Rack.
Well, with that, I'd like to make a motion to accept the DWR's recommendation. The only change I'll make is that we add the West Desert Vernon unit as a 20th unit to the private land only permit system, and with an additional 200 permits allocated to that unit.
I'll second that.
Do we want to eliminate those two San Juan hunts that Justin talked about?
Already done.
Already done.
Oh, pardon. Okay.
In his Okay. I have a first and a second to accept it with that addition of a private lands additional unit in the Vernon, and recommend 200 permits for that. I have a first and a second on that. Well, let's make a vote. We'll go from there. Any discussion, though, on that? Go ahead.
Larry, I think you raised a good point out there with the population objective of zero. And while on the Wasatch unit, we've been using this private lands only tags as a tool to try to distribute the elk back on the public, it's also a tool like you're looking for out there to, and I remember when we wrote the elk plan, this was tossed around a lot to allow private landowners to deal with their own problems, and I think it's a great tool for that. So I'm 100% in support of that, and I think it's a great idea out in this particular instance. So.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, seeing none, we'll vote on that to accept the division's recommendations as presented, and to add a private lands only permit on the Vernon, a total of 200 permits.
Why should it be a private land only?
Because that's what it is.
That's the motion.
That's the motion.
I know, but if it's still a zero.
Okay, let's vote on that motion. If you'd like to make an additional motion after that, we can. All in favor of that presentation? Eight in favor. Any opposed? One opposed and one abstention. Okay.
I'd like to say I only oppose because I think the whole Vernon unit, since it's a zero objective, should be open to that. Not just the private, but the whole Vernon unit.
I think they've got it pretty covered. I mean, it's an open bowl unit to begin with. They can also, during that time, they can also get permission from private landowners to hunt on their land. As well, now, they have, we have voted for and approved 200 private land permits so that they can go and hunt on those private lands.
That's correct.
Plus the mitigation and control permits that become available or needed for, so. Okay, I think we're good with that then. Colby, CWMU analyst permit recommendations.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a 2017 CWMU Atlas voucher and permit recommendation review. So this year there are 62 CORs that are previously approved. Only four CWMUs are requesting changes to those numbers, and 12 require Wildlife Board approval. So just a quick summary of what's going on this year. For the antlerless CWMU permits and vouchers, there are 300 vouchers that will go to CWMUs if this is approved. And 1,216 permits that'll come back to the public for access to those private lands. Just a quick reminder of how this works. The buck and bull permit election then determines the antlers permit. So you're allowed to choose a 90-10 split on your buck and bull. But if you do that, you get 100% of your antlers permits go back to the public. 85-15 at 25-75, 80-20 is 40-60. And if you're willing to take a 75-25 on your private-public split, then you split the antlerless vouchers. Pronghorn is 60-40 on bucks, and always 40-60. And cow moose, although they don't have any, they're the same for cows. All right, so we just do this by region then. Double cone, that population is down a little bit out there. They are below the population objective, and they came in and requested to reduce the permits by 11, and we can agree with that. The rest are renewals and one new CWMU, and all of those we agree with the recommendations. In the southeastern region, we've got two renewals there, both mini mod and red ranches, and those have been at those numbers for a while, and we feel like those are adequate. Pavant Enzyme it says new here, but this is really a combination of the Black Point CWMU and the Missouri Flat CWMU. So there's some history here and where those numbers are, and we felt comfortable with those numbers for pronghorn and elk as well. Recommend approval. All right, so in the central region, we have a few reductions here. And this is because we worked hard this year. We did start a new, we did augment a population on the Stansberries, and we took those elk from Heber Valley. So we set up a trap, and we trapped 88 elk out of the Heber Valley, which we know will affect those surrounding CWMUs. And we worked with them to get a reduction in their permits because of that. And Cottonwood Ridge is a new pronghorn unit there in the northeastern region. So 10 permits, 4 private, 6 public. Again, here's your breakdown and your summary. 236 private permits, private vouchers for elk, 64 for pronghorn. But then where the CWMU program really pays off in a lot of ways is getting access to these properties for hunting opportunity and antlers harvest. And 1,200 permits there for the public. Okay. Any questions?
That was quick, Colby.
I do my best.
Okay. Any questions from the RAC on the presentation? Okay. Sometimes these RAC meetings on the CWMUs, we go through a whole list of them. So this is pretty darn quick tonight. So.
This next fall will be rough, so I'm just keep it short this time.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the public on this? Okay, I have some cards here concerning this. Burke Roney.
Richard, I think that'll be for my next presentation.
We'll just hold off then on this. Sorry. Any comments from the public on this? Okay, bring it back to the RAC. Any comments from any of the RAC members? Okay, I'll entertain a motion. Carl.
Want me to do it or you do it? I'll make the recommendation that we accept the CWMU antlerless permit recommendations as presented.
Okay, we have a first and a second. Okay. All in favor? Okay, it's unanimous. Okay.
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 This next presentation, it is another action item for the Central Region. It's the 2017 CWMU variance request. So in rule, there's a process where a CWMU doesn't meet the minimum specifications of the rule where they can apply for a variance. The variance is first heard by the CWMU Advisory Committee. And they're an advisory committee to the board, to the division. But the division and the advisory committee don't always align. And we'll go through this presentation here. So in 2017, we did have one CWMU come and present a variance. So the Double R Ranch is currently an active deer CWMU. It's there on the bottom. This map is a little bit hard to see. But the bottom with the checkered, that's over 6,000 acres of currently functioning CWMU. They came in and proposed to be an elk CWMU. So that, with the adjoining property across the way, the Fitzgerald property, would add another 5,600 acres for a total of about 12,200 acres. There's some mitigation properties. It says USA, which is a funny title. USA owns some of this, apparently. So there's some mitigation property from the Strawberry Project, Central Utah Project, between these two. And so there is no way, they're completely surrounded by federal land, there is no way for these to be contiguous. So the variance is to have a 12,200-acre non-contiguous CWMU. The CWMU Advisory Committee heard the recommendation or heard the case, and they had a unanimous vote to accept the variance request. However, at this time, the division cannot support the CWMU Advisory Committee's recommendation, and that's simply because it doesn't meet the criteria set forth in a rule. Just some of the things that we're doing that I think you guys should be aware of. Understand that these situations are difficult. So the DWR is working towards a landowner association rule revision, and we want to try to reach some of these landowners. And we're planning on bringing that revised rule back by at least this RAC meeting, this RAC and board meeting scheduled next year. Thank you.
Okay, any questions from the RAC?
Well, I can give further explanation to this. This is part of me, too. The reason we do not connect is back when they put expanded Strawberry Reservoir and Soldier Creek Reservoir, federal government came in and threatened with condemnation on the USA ground. Can you put the map back up, Cole?
Sure, yes.
The piece in between Roney property and Fitzgerald property, they threatened condemnation, so it was either a sell or they're taking it anyway. And through that process, we have another map that Mr. Roney will show you how our properties did connect at one time. We connected, all the way along the Strawberry River. And then in the 80s, when they were having all the issues about the fishermen and stream beds walking private property, people were getting very upset. They were getting out of the creeks, going on property. They were out of bounds. And so the Nature Conservancy approached my Uncle Jack and asked him if he would more or less just donate a quarter of a mile from the river away from the property to give angler access. So in the past, we were not connected at this date because we were threatened with condemnation, and then another good deed by my uncle has separated our properties where we do not connect anymore. And so that's why we're asking for this variance. The CWMU committee
like Roney's property first, just by itself, and then he approached them with my property, and I didn't talk to them personally, but they liked it better because it falls in the guidelines of over a 10,000-acre CWMU. But we have that issue with an unconnecting property, but it's through not our fault that we do not connect at this time. So we're asking for a variance to get the CWMU, and Mr. Roney has more of that. So if you have questions, ask him, Ben.
Any questions from the RAC?
I think you've answered my major question. I was asking about the why they aren't connected. So basically, they're not connected because the federal government came and took the connecting pieces some time ago. Yeah, I would. Whenever we get to that point, it doesn't have to be right now. But other questions, Covey. I don't know if this would be for Covey or Larry for you, but are we talking? What are we talking here? Are we talking deer, CWMU, or elk, or both? Or
so both pieces qualify independently for deer.
Okay. But so this would be for elk.
Yeah, this would be a variance to allow an elk CWMU, and double R is currently a deer CWMU. So I'm assuming, so this is just for the variance to be an elk CWMU, okay, to apply this next fall. I assume they would apply for deer and elk, but I don't know that.
I just want to make sure I'm understanding this map here. So that's Strawberry Reservoir there, right?
Yes.
Soldier Creek, okay, right. And isn't there some tribal ground out there pretty close to this area as well? Or is that further west? That's further west, okay.
Right on the line.
East, there's some east too.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
Kind of surrounded.
There's a few tribal pieces out there for sure.
Yeah, so what does public access look like into that public ground between the two? So, like, is it accessible? I mean,
the answer to that is it can be a pretty nasty canyon.
Yeah.
All right. If we were to approve this as an elk CWMU, what kind of tags are we looking at for total tags and public access tags that would come along with it? Or do we know? Yeah.
This is just the variance, Ben. Some of that would be based on the split that they elect.
Sure.
But If I look at other CWMUs on the Wasatch, it's based on the number that's allocated, right? So the Wasatch allocates this percentage, and then every acre is worth that. So when we do our calculations, we come back, and it seems to me like last time we did those calculations, it was a little over 1,000 acres qualifies for about 12 to 1,500 acres, somewhere in there. But we'd have to redo those calculations based on this year's permits.
I have a comment on that. I'm assuming these are private properties already. And so it really doesn't make any difference on the public hunt, except now you're going to grant some public hunters on there, depending on what the deal goes, if you get your CWMU. Which they don't have that opportunity now. Okay, that's what I wanted to clarify at this point, because the reality of it is what you want to do is be able to have that opportunity to hunt elk, but to do that you need that variance, and that variance was taken away because of the gratitude of the relative to a certain degree. but the reality of it is that you would at this point then apply for that CWMU, and then depending on what your split is, it would depend on what the public access is. And so I just think that I just wanted to clarify that this is already property that doesn't have public access anyhow, and so it actually is going to open up some opportunity for some public hunters.
Sure, I get that. One more question, Covey. What are both of these parcels substantial elk habitat, or I guess that's my next question, is
I don't think there's an elk on either one of them.
No, I'm
so
I asked because so, just looking at it and with my familiarity with the area a little bit, it looks to me like the one on the bottom, that property, that looks like it's definitely elk habitat. I question the upper one, and I ask because I don't know.
That's a great question, Ben. I have been on both properties at classifying elk and at different times of the year. And what I can say is the Fitzgerald property actually was one of those public hunters that didn't have access to it this last year with an archery tag with one of my friends, and we sat there and bugled pretty hard trying to get them off. It's actually a great rut property. It's rolling aspen, and then the Roney property is probably more of a recovery property, deep canyons. I've seen elk on these properties is what I can say. They're both elk habitat.
Okay, that's what I need. No, thank you.
Matt?
So is there some precedent around this? Have we granted a variance in a similar situation in the past?
So the CWU program has evolved over time, I guess, and to answer that question directly mm-hmm. is difficult. But so there was a time when elk CWUs were 5,000 acres.
Right.
And it didn't work. So we changed it. And
why didn't it work?
They're too, that's too small of a scale to hunt elk on.
Okay. But what does that mean? Low satisfaction from public hunters?
You start to push, you drive the elk off.
Okay.
And you can get yourself in a problem there. That said, you know, obviously we understand not all properties are created equally. There was a variance granted last year for Missouri Flat to include the mountain property as part of their CWMU. However, Missouri Flat had been operating since the program initiated that way. And so when it was purchased by a different landowner, he had the option of either purchasing the entity and getting around the rule, or he said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'll purchase it and I'll ask for a variance. So it was a little bit different situation than this, but... you know, this is a unique situation too, where mm-hmm. where at one time it was all private ground, and now there's a strip of public. So,
is there the opportunity to annex the public ground into the CWMU there? Or?
Kobe, don't we do that on some CWMUs now?
So I will for the purpose of connectivity. Mm-hmm. No. Now, right? In the past, has it happened? Yes. There was a rule change that made it so that was not allowable to annex in public ground. But I see what you're saying. I mean, you could ask for the variance for that, right? To include the public ground, or you could ask for the variance for non-contiguous. Yep.
So I'm just curious, what specifically in this case was, what portion of the rule put you in a position where you feel like the variance has to be denied?
Yeah. I think it's just adhering to the rule as it's written.
Which is the non-contiguous.
It's non-contiguous.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Kobe.
So I have a question real quick, and maybe you just explained it, but so is this variance request specifically just for the CWMU, or is this a request that
So variance requests have to come independently in front of the advisory committee, right. And then through this is in your region, so your RAC, and then to the board. So it is individual. Yeah, they are one by one reviewed and said yes or no.
So are there other situations that could benefit from this if it does set precedence?
There are other situations like this in the state of Utah. So I mean, not exactly, but there are other non-contiguous parcels. You know, I think this has some uniqueness in that it used to be all private ground.
let me ask you this. I mean, if you approve the variance, that public portion of that in between these things, that still doesn't deny public access, right? I mean, people can still continue to go up there and go fishing, whatever. Doesn't change.
Yeah, if we approve the variance as requested, that ground doesn't become part of the CWMU at all. They could still hunt deer or elk in there.
Okay.
Did I hear you right? Did you say that you're going to suggest some changes to the Wildlife Board within the next year to change this rule?
So the changes, no, would be to a different rule, and that is there is another way to allocate permits to private landowners on limited entry units, and that's the Limited Entry Landowner Association rule. And it works well on some units. The Vernon, it works well where you don't have a lot of private landowners and a lot of private land. It's more difficult to implement as it currently is written on units like the Wasatch because of some requirements in the rule, because you have a lot of private landowners.
I've got a question. Larry, you're familiar with the ground directly south of Soldier Creek. It's being developed, I suppose.
Yes.
Right. What about, and that area was just an incredible calving area, and so there was a fair amount of opposition from the public and others relative to that development. But do you see any issues with this, with the CWMU relative to that development? Are there going to be any issues in the future, or is this? Thank you. Okay.
Ask Burke the question when he gets up.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. George, go ahead.
Just for Mike and I's safety, when we leave the room tonight, condemnation's a bad word. And what federal agency? I'm just curious. Was that the Bureau of Reclamation or? Was it okay? We're good, Mike.
Okay. Remember, this is a question session. Is there any other questions from the RAC then? Okay. We'll move to the public. Is there any questions from the public about this? Okay. We'll close that and we'll go to the comment period. Okay. Burke Roney, if you'd like to come forward.
Yep. Wow. I've got a couple of pictures for you guys to look at while we're talking about this. So you can't see these big old dark cannons and things like that.
Burke's going to give out free prints after the meeting.
Yeah, I'm going to pass these around. You can just kind of pass around. We'll talk about in a minute. There's the maps of what it used to look like. So I wanted to first answer the question for Mr. Potts about the development. So the development you see occurring is just next to the dam on the property down by the lake. There's 400 acres down there that are being developed. It's where the asphalt turns to dirt. Right now, if you go there on any given weekend in the summer, it's full of what we call squatters. I'm nice to them. They are there. They want to be there just like everybody else does. So it's not a real hunting area right now. If anything, this CWMU provides motivation for us not to develop. If I have a successful CWMU, if I'd had this 10 years ago, I wouldn't have developed at all. But helps gives an opportunity for my kids to maybe keep it and not have to develop it. But I do have development plans down by the lake, and obviously if we develop into it, we'll lose the CWMU, which I don't want to do. But I want to thank you guys first off for the opportunity to apply. I want to thank Kobe. I also understand and recognize that he has to represent the integrity of the division and his job and what he does, and this does not comply. And so we would have complied had the BOR not taken the property. If you see the property, the stuff that was in yellow, some of you know John Childs, who I bought the property from in the 90s.
And I talked to him today, and there's still plenty of feelings there from him about how this occurred. His own documents on the cell say that this was done under threat of condemnation. So it's just really interesting. They had to sell. But they cooperated in their own way. And so we're just asking now that you all cooperate with us, that the state cooperate with us, where we were contiguous and had to do that with the previous landowners. I'm actually grateful that there is a variance process. That means there's a chance. I mean, in rare instances, there's a process for this, and we think that we're one of them. I don't think it sets any precedent for anyone else. I do think, personally, the one-size-fits-all policy of 10,000 acres isn't appropriate, but it's there. Honestly, my unit and Larry's unit could be independent, successful CWMU units. We see many of the grandfathered CWMUs that are under 10,000 acres that are successful and still operating. And as these agmen and cattlemen know, and I run cattle too, as Larry knows, it's about AUMs. It's about habitat. It's not about acreage. It's about water and feed and places of refuge. And so it's actually very arbitrary to assign a number of 10,000 acres when so different. One place can have 20,000 acres and have the same feed as another place of 7,000. However, having said that, we're trying to do everything we can to be as close to the rule as we can. And so by the Fitzgeralds and us throwing in together, we're over 12,000 acres. So we're not applying independently. We're applying together as a variance. And we just want you to consider that. I do think it does benefit the public. The biologists put it excellent tonight. We see it happen all the time where the hunt, not even the hunt. I mean, in Strawberry, people go hiking and horseback riding and ATV riding and looking for arrowheads and goals. I don't know what they do, but they get up there and they create their own pressure. And as soon as they start that pressure, they go on to private grounds. They find these big old dark canyons and they hide on us. We don't benefit from it financially. Yeah, we have folks ask us for trespass permits, or people who draw out want to come in. It's no fun charging people who waited 16 years to get a tag to come in. It just doesn't feel good. It just never does. So we don't really benefit, especially if we're running cattle. We think there's a competition. I've been running an elk CWMU with Paul here for the last 10 or 11 years with him as the operator. He's been excellent, by the way. That's why I brought him. It really is interesting because you get to see the balance between managing for animals and managing for livestock, and you can make it work. Once you start to financially benefit from it, your perspective changes. I think this will be super fun to see the Fitzgeralds involved in this, and it'll be great. Also, this will benefit the public greatly by not only the new unit, which they've never hunted on. How many of you have ever been on this property, by the way? A few? Okay. Very few people have even been on it. But the public will benefit greatly by us creating our own pressure and pushing those animals back out for the public to hunt. Larry can tell you how old some of the animals are. How old are some of the elk that you've shot on your place?
Every elk we killed on our assembly over the age projected. The elk my wife killed with the tooth, they estimated that elk at 14 years old.
So you're talking old animals.
I waited 17 years to draw an elk, and my elk was 9 years old. My son's elk was 9 years old. All the elk have been way over the age. What is our age projected in that? Six and a half?
Five and a half, six.
Five and a half, six. All of them have been 8+, and they're actually out of the hunting population, if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah, you just don't see elk that old very often on public ground. We have them. We let a guy trespass last year, and Paul guided a guy in and shot a 374 bull here. I would have brought the pictures, but I didn't want people jumping over the fence after we showed it. But we do have elk. This is an elk habitat area, period. I'm in a deer CWMU, and I really belong in an elk CWMU, way more than deer. But anyways, I think it benefits the public greatly by creating our own pressure, making kind of leveling the playing field for the public out there, new hunt areas. I think it's the right thing to do because it used to belong to both of the owners. I think there'll be support for it at the next level. We totally understand that Kobe can't support it, but doesn't mean that you can't if your conscience says you can.
We might be rejected at the next level, but at least you all did what you could for it. I think some of the new rule changes will be great, but I don't want to wait 2 or 3 or 4 years for something to happen, because it makes a difference of whether we can keep it or whether we develop it and things like that. That's about it. I just want to thank you for your time and encourage you to approve it.
Thank you.
Any questions for me?
Yeah, I have one.
Okay.
So the map, the great map, by the way, the map that you've provided here doesn't show farther to the west to the tribal land. That map does.
Yeah, so see where it says SPR right there close to the lake, SBRLC? So I actually own that now.
Yeah, I get that.
But right where your finger is. Yep, Strawberry Pines Resort. I bought it from them 2012. They have another 500 acres to the west.
Yep.
And then there's 1,000 acres of tribal land next to that.
Right, I get that. And so, but it wasn't on this map, so I didn't know if you own that or not. And so that was the ground I was alluding to that has such awesome, calving habitat.
Oh, yeah, that does for sure. Yeah, and that's not being developed.
Oh, God.
Yeah, there's two owners on it.
I can hug you.
Yeah, there's two owners on it. Mine is very public. I used to hate that the public drove through part of my ranch, but I've embraced it now because I can't do anything about it. I'm doing a RV park down by the lake and things like that. Also, we're surrounded, in the areas that are green there, we're surrounded on 3.5 sides by Forest Service, Ashley National Forest and Uinta. So we don't really have any other choice. Okay, thank you.
I'm Paul Phillips. I work in the valley out there, and I've been an operator for Burke for 9 or 10 years, and it's a long time. I've been in the valley for probably close to 40 years, running a business there and working, and have a Forest Service permit out there to outfit and guide since 1988, and know the area really well, and I've had a really good working relationship with Burke and his property for the last, 8 or 9 or 10 years. So these are great, unique properties that people don't get to see. This whole property covers the lower corridor of Willow Creek and is a beautiful piece of property that people would really enjoy to hunt. Deep canyons, great habitat for elk, and I work this property pretty hard, and I think as an operator it's very important if you have a smaller unit like this that doesn't meet the requirements to work closely with those people who have tags on it. And my commitment to the public would be great on this property to make sure that we run it in a way that their experience would be well received. And so I'd just like to stand and say I support. I would ask for your support in this variance, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. And one more card, Paul Davis.
My name is Paul Davis. I'm a retired conservation officer for Wildlife Resources, and that was my area for probably 15 years. So I'm just here on behalf of Burke and the Fitzgerald property that it is unique that it's really elk country. This isn't just one of the CWMUs. We've got 5,000 acres of sagebrush and nothing else. It's deep canyons. And both of these owners, I've never had any problem with. As a wildlife officer, outfitters and CWMUs can be kind of a pain in the neck. I've never had any problems with either one of these. And Burke just recently told me that it's a 10-2 split is what they were looking for. But anyway, I just want to reiterate, and that, in law enforcement, rules are made. I think the rule was made they had to be contiguous, so you didn't have somebody from Heber with 5,000 acres, somebody from Springville with 5,000 acres. Let's make an elk CWMU. This is kind of a different story where you have both of them that close where they'd make over the 10,000 to make the CWMU.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to say something. I think to help create an incentive to keep these properties native and available for elk and not be developed is pretty strong. I think there has to be a financial incentive to help create that. Otherwise, I think the pressure to develop them and make money on them in that way is a lot more. So I personally, and I don't get the vote, but I would be in favor of putting those two properties into a CWMU.
I just have one comment on that, and I just want to go on record to agree that these variances should be granted on an individual basis and based on the facts of that particular variance being offered every time, so we don't feel like we're making precedent for anybody else that all of a sudden decides that they want because there's one piece of property 4 miles down the road or something like that. I think that it needs to go on the record that no matter how we vote tonight, that these will be done on an individual basis every time, just to make sure that people realize if they come up with these grandiose ideas that just because if a precedent was set tonight, it really wasn't a precedent, it was a vote on one particular property. That's what I'd like to state on that.
Yeah, thank you. Any other? Go ahead, Matt.
I'd like to make a motion that we grant the various requests for the Double R Ranch CWMU.
Okay, we have a motion. Second by Alan to grant the variance. Any discussion? Okay, take a vote. All in favor? Vote is unanimous with one abstention. Okay. I think that's it. If there's anything the board wants to talk about or anything. Thanks, Colby. Okay,
thank you
for being here.